Mrs. Bottomley, reel 5.
In hospital till February the 9th, enjoying good food and excellent nursing. Then on to Le Touquet, Paris Plage, to Woodside Convalescent Home, run by Miss Giles and Dr. Nash, until February the 20th. I'm just putting a bit in. It was in a lovely house, not far from the seafront, and in the better part of Paris Plage. And I think it belonged to an English titled lady, Lady Angela Forbes. We never saw her, but it was her residence in peacetime, and she'd handed it over to the military for a convalescent home. It was very, very nice, with comfortable beds and plenty of bedding. We were warm, and it was just the place for a convalescent home. I enjoyed it very much. Met some people from other camps, not all from our, from different towns, and got some different slants on army life and that sort of thing. It was very nice. And I was there until February the 20th. Then I had to go back to Abbeville, to Camp 3, straight into sick bay until the 24th, and then I went on leave to London. I arrived at Victoria about 6:30 p.m. and had a spot of bother with a soldier standing on the platform, who passed some derogatory remarks about the wax. Do you want to know what he said? He hinted that we were more or less prostitutes sent out to amuse the army, which naturally I took exception to, and stood up to him and told him off. A crowd gathered and an argument started, and the military police were called, and they took names and numbers and told me to take off the blue and white armband from my coat. They didn't know it at all. Never seen anybody with a blue and white armband on. I refused to do this as it was part of my uniform, being a signaller. By the time I returned to Abbeville, Miss Welsford, the unit administrator, had the whole case before her. But when I explained my side of the row, she said that I had acted on behalf of my comrades in defending our good name, etc., and the MPs had no authority over me when in England on leave. By the 12th of March, I was back on duty at last. One thing that worried me above everything was the fear of being attacked by rats. There were plenty about by now, and it was not allowed to keep food in the hut unless in an airtight tin. The a rat can be as big as a fisherman's fish, you know. Elastic, can't it? They were ordinary, nasty rats. And sometimes when the men came with fox terriers and pulled all the sandbags away, the terriers used to go in and send them running and then chase them, and the men used to hit them with shovels. It was terrifying. I couldn't get high enough up to get away from them. I don't know why. Why does a person want to climb on a chair or get high up if they see a mouse? Because the mouse can easily reach you. I don't know, it's a funny idea. But these were terrified me. And of course they gathered round the latrines as well. I was always frightened to go up there at night time for fear there were any rats. Rats did worry me, really. And when they fetched these from under the hut, many a time there were little tiny things, babies, pink, no fur on. Ooh. Perhaps about a dozen of them in a little nest. And you see, they fetched those out and killed them all. It was horrible. It was the nasty part. And you see, the men in the trenches got rats as well. They more or less lived with them. I don't think men are as frightened of rats as I was. I don't know whether I'm one on my own, but I am really. I'm not frightened of any other animal. I don't care what it is, a dog as big as a house or a horse or anything, I love them, but not rats. I'm not frightened of mice either. Uh, Where did I get to? The men came with fox terriers on routine rat hunts from time to time, and to me it was more frightening than air raids. On the 14th of March 1918, Mrs. Burley Leach, who was head of the WACs in England, came to give us a pep talk, and camps 2 and 3 were squeezed into our mess hall. I cannot remember what Mrs. Burley Leach said to us, but I gathered that she had heard disquieting reports about the overseas girls and came to see for herself what sort of people we were. There was some talk of sending military police to the main towns in France, but this caused an uproar among the WACs, and the idea was dropped, and we were left to be dealt with by the men's MPs when necessary. On March the 21st, 1918, things began to get very hot. A big offensive started, and the ambulances were pouring in day and night. Many times there were what should have been stretcher cases were having to be set up because the space was so limited in the ambulances, and these poor men were all squeezed against one another, propping one another up. We used to go in at night when we'd come off duty and light cigarettes when they were all lined up in stretchers waiting for medical attention, and we used to go along giving them cigarettes and lighting them for them. Some of them were terribly bad with there was a bad gas attack, and some of these men, a Canadian that I'd met, the Canadian that took me through the sewer pipe, he came back badly gassed. I didn't know him. His neck and his shoulders were all in one, you know. His neck didn't go in. It all popped out here, and he looked ghastly. He couldn't talk, and that was with phosgene gas. Eventually, I used to go up every day to see him while he was in Abbeville. They moved him to London, and then over to Vancouver, and he died on the sea journey over. It was very sad because he was a charming boy. But the ambulances were pouring in night and day, and our three hospitals were overflowing. They were under canvas in huge marquees. The number 2 stationary, British Hospital, 3rd Australian General and South African. The WACs went to help when off duty. We rolled bandages, patched rubber gloves and anaesthetic masks, folded lint pads and made many tail bandages. They were for body wounds. Have you made a many tail bandage? It's very interesting. On March the 23rd, we had rumours that Paris had been shelled by a long-range gun called Big Bertha. And there were endless convoys all night of nurses and patients retreating from the forward CCSs. The news was exceedingly grim. On the 25th of March, there was trouble on in Amiens. It was being bombed and shelled incessantly, and the civilian population were pouring into Abbeville, a most pathetic sight, some with 2-wheeled carts, some with barrows, and others just carrying as much as they could manage to salvage from the onslaught. Cattle and goats, hens and domestic pets. They passed by our camp in a never-ending procession, disappearing into the woods and on towards the coast. Then we got our marching orders. We were instructed to keep a haversack at the ready with a minimum of toilet requisites and necessities, ready to beat a hasty retreat at a moment's notice. We stood firm and said we stood shoulder to shoulder with our men, and if they stayed, we did not retreat. But on the 27th of March, when I got to camp off duty, everyone was standing by, ready packed to move. We were still not settled by the 5th of April, and the rumours of our removal were still rife on the 8th, when we wakened to the sound of guns, nearer than we'd ever heard them before. It was a very misty morning, and the guns kept at it for a very long time. By now, the military telephone exchange, which had been staffed with WACs, was restaffed with men, and the women sent to other bases, all except the 2 who were at the base commandant's office. Holland and myself Colonel Holton would not consent to us going, as it would upset his office routine. So we came under the signal officer, who was a very military man, and made us go to his office and salute him for our pay. It is a joke to go to his office and stand there and salute him. He was only a little lieutenant. We didn't think much to him, really.
Were you glad to stay there when the other women left, or were you
afraid? Oh, yes. I'd never been, although I was rated as a signaller, I'd never really been taken in with the rest of them because they were on the main exchange, you see. And although they wanted to take Holland and myself in with them, the colonel wouldn't let us. He said, no, we'd been with him from the beginning. Well, Holland hadn't, she came later. But we'd been with him and got used to his office, all his office routine. He didn't want to lose us. He wouldn't hear of us going. Being two new ones. No, we took it all in our stride. I was more frightened of rats than anything, I tell you. On April the 15th, Abbeville was put out of bounds, except on duty. We weren't given a reason, but we were on a nightly alert, and the guns certainly sounded nearer then. Nearer. During that out-of-bounds period, one of our hut, Simpson, she worked at the LFC, that's Lines of Communication, which is the top notcher. He was above our office, the head of all Abbeville and the area. And she worked there, she was the colonel's secretary, and she'd been working late. And it was a bright moonlight night when she came out, and we weren't supposed to go out alone. If you wanted to do anything, even if you'd been on duty, to come home at night in the dark, we had to have two. So she should really have arranged for one of the other girls to stay on duty to walk her home. And she thought it was ridiculous. She said so too. And she was caught by our chief, Miss Frood, who was the head of the WAX in the area. She was caught by her walking round the town at 10 o'clock at night. And she said, what was she doing? She said she was going a long way round because she was enjoying the moonlight. So she was on the carpet and she got into bother for being out in the town alone. Of course, really, it wasn't a safe thing to do, but she was quite sure of herself. And she's a charming girl. She came from Ilkley. She died not so long ago, left £33,000. Cafe, we couldn't go shopping or anything. All we could do was to go to our offices and straight back to the camp. We weren't told why. There must have been some reason. We were on a nightly alert, and the guns certainly sounded nearer. Then on the 23rd, there was a very bright moon. That's the night that Simmy took her moonlight walk. And the guns went up at it all night. But the following night it was raining, so we had some sleep, thank goodness. On the 2nd of May, a nice, hot, sunny day, I was on duty when Colonel Holton came into the switch room and told me to be especially alert, as we had royalty at the HQ LFC. And it was quite possible that they might come to our office. The royalty turned out to be King George V, accompanied by Sir Douglas Haig, Lord Milner, Lloyd George, and various other people that were with them. They'd come for a conference with the Lines of Communication, LFC, but we saw nothing of them. But they all went to the officers' club for their meals, you see, and those girls that worked at the officers' club were sworn to secrecy. I didn't know until after why I had to be alert, but we were very, very proud of it, to be included in them. Colonel Pearson had become promoted. He was under Colonel Holton. He'd become promoted to base commandant at Abancourt, and persuaded Colonel Holton to part with a typist and a signaller to help form his new office staff. Dot Hastings, that's this one, she was a shorthand typist, stenographer, she called herself, that Hastings was to go as his personal typist and I as his chief telephonist. But it never came off, as Abancourt was being bombed and shelled. We were very sorry about this, as Colonel Pearson was a great favourite with the WACs. He used to come in with his cap full of walnuts. Off where he billeted was in a chateau, and it had lovely nut trees in the garden, and when the walnuts were ripe, he used to fill his cap at dinner time and bring them in and tip them onto our table. He was a real grand fella. On May the 13th, I became engaged to Sapper Bottomley in the Signals.
How did you meet him?
Well, he used to come to the office to repair the telephone if there were any faults and that sort of thing. He worked. He was in under the same officers as I was. It wasn't often he was in the town. He went about a bit. But it was this Abancourt business that made him propose. He said if I was going away to Abancourt, would I be engaged to him? And, well, I liked him. I said I'd give it a go. We weren't allowed to wear diamond rings. We could have a signet ring. I had a signet ring which he bought in Paris Plage, Le Touquet. I've got it in a box somewhere. It's broken, but I keep it. Sentimental. From about this date, we had quite a few Hun planes over Abbeville taking photographs, we presumed. So we guessed that they were getting ready to strafe Abbeville, which they did on May the 15th, killing many horses. Oh, I'll never forget it. They did scream. Many horses and mules at the AHTD, just missing our home.